Welcome into another edition of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Eric Pfeiffer here from the Fort Wayne Farm Show here in Allen County at the War Memorial Coliseum. And today on the podcast, presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with some support from Indiana Farm Bureau, we are talking about biofuels. And I've got just the right people to do it. Here first, Steve Hall is with me, making the trip up from Indy, out of the barnyard, and into the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum for the Fort Wayne Farm Show. How are we doing, Steve?
Doing well. Good to be here.
It's starting to get a little busy around here. I think some folks maybe took a little break for lunch, but maybe they'll start to pick up here at the farm show.
Yeah, it's an incredible show, as folks that have attended in the past have witnessed. It's a great show. It's very fortunate to have it here in Fort Wayne, and it's good to be a part of it and see a lot of folks and see some new technology and new products. It's good to get around the show.
Absolutely. Over here to Steve's right, Aaron Kuhn is here with Poet. And Aaron, I know that you guys have been a part of this show for a long time, and I was over at your booth here a little while ago, and a lot of folks coming over to ask questions, talking about basis and everything else. I mean, this is kind of just what the show's all about, getting out and meeting some folks, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we've had a presence here at the Fort Wayne Farm Show, and it is a great show. Since we've had a presence in the Eastern Corn Belt, the fact that the USDA gave us some good news and kind of gave the markets a shot in the arm starting last Friday has certainly helped the traffic level and the inquiring minds. Wouldn't be the Fort Wayne Farm Show without a little dose of weather. So looked like last week the forecast was pretty clear, but as for typical Fort Wayne Farm Show weather, we've got a little snow out there. So
yeah, trying to get in. It wasn't too bad on my way in. We'll see how it goes on the way back home.
I think that's a Fort Wayne Farm Show tradition.
It is
to have a little bit of bad weather for this week.
Absolutely. Here to my left, Jeremy Mullins with Louis Dreyfus Company in Claypool. And Jeremy, one, thanks for hosting us here at your booth here in the back wing, the newer wing here of the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum here at the Fort Wayne Farm Show. And this is always fun. This is kind of like my hangout when I come here, because I'm too cheap to like buy a booth. So I just come here and I mooch off of you guys. So thank you, Jeremy, for that, for years of your continued support of me mooching here at the farm show.
Well, it's our pleasure, and thanks for having us on today to talk about these issues. It's very important, and we're glad that more farmers are paying attention to this and learning about it, because it's a critical issue for the industry. But yeah, we're always glad to have you here. We've been coming here. I think we were able to get our first booth in 2008. It took us a couple years to get in, because before this new wing came along, we were stuck in a different part that wasn't as nice. This is beautiful. We've been over here next to Beck's for many, many years, so we're grateful to be here.
And, the Fort Wayne Farm Show is open until Thursday. So if you listen to this prior to Thursday the 16th, come on over to the show and check it out. By the way, Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin is here. His day job is with Louis Dreyfus. So he's here and he's, doing his thing, whatever it is he does for you. I don't even know. Is it the same thing with you guys that he does with us? We don't really know what exactly he does.
Well, we both talk a lot. So that's what we really do, is talk a lot. So hopefully we'll buy a few beans on the way in those conversations.
That'd be good. That'd be good. Well, let's get to what we want to talk about today is in the way of policy. The General Assembly is underway at the Indiana State House, and we just had the inauguration here over the weekend. A lot of things happening. It really was interesting. I was at the State House all last week, one on Wednesday covering some news, and then Thursday and Friday I was there as part of my Ag Leadership Program that I'm participating this year with the Agri Institute. And it was just very interesting that the State House is kind of a buzz right now, Steve, with all of the change that's happening and the General Assembly opening. Mm-hmm. Just a lot going on right now. And, you know, we look at years like 2024, where there just wasn't a ton going on in the way of agriculture. I can't even really go back and think of a bill that really addressed agriculture that much, other than the farmland bill that we've talked about, trying to keep it out of the hands of China. You know, we've touched on that quite a bit mm-hmm. on this podcast and in other ways, but this year there's a lot
yep.
coming down the pike.
Yep.
There are so many things, and we haven't even mentioned the fact that this is a budget year.
Yeah, there's just Last year, though, we did have our biofuels bill that we have spoke about on the podcast in the past. And coming up this year, we are going to see that again. Representative Heine from the Fort Wayne area, New Haven, is going to carry it in the House. And then Senator Buchanan, Brian Buchanan, Senator down around Lebanon, is going to carry it in the Senate. Those are companion bills. They are identical to the bill we had last year. So we're building momentum. And we're going to see that again this year. But you're right. There are a number of other ag-related bills. We're starting to see more issues, bills around water, water usage, water availability. You're going to see some of those. There are some other farmland protection-type bills that I've seen so far drop in the General Assembly. So it is going to be a busy year for the ag groups down in Indianapolis.
And the reason I hadn't gotten quite to that one yet is because last year in 24, we didn't really see this bill move a whole lot because there were some fiscal things attached to it, which meant we knew that it wasn't really going anywhere because it wasn't a budget year.
Right.
So we knew that was going to be the case. Last year, we knew it was going to get a hearing, and that was the ultimate goal. Let's get it heard. Let's get this in front of lawmakers so that they can really understand what it's all about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that paid off. We did have, and policy and advocacy does take time. So you have to kind of step back and kind of acknowledge some wins. Even though it's not your ultimate goal, but we have to, as with any new concept, it may take a few cycles of the General Assembly to build enough support to get it passed. And our goal last year was to get it heard, get the conversation going. We were able to pick up some support from additional lawmakers, just verbal support that they do support the concept and support the bill. Although we did not they did not take a vote because there was no point in moving it because it does have a fiscal impact. And it needs to be a budget year to do that, that type of bill. It was still good to have that conversation about the importance of biofuels, not just to farmers, but to the broader communities across Indiana.
So ultimately, again, going back, this is House Bill 1127 and Senate Bill 254. Ultimately, what this bill is going to do is provide tax credits to retailers, right, Steve? I mean, yeah. This is all about getting more availability to consumers because right now, you know, I know where I can go get, you know, unleaded 88 E15 for my vehicle.
Yeah.
Not every consumer is that tied into it. I mean, I'm kind of in the biz, you know, like I know.
Kind of know where to look.
I know where to look. I can go find that. Mm-hmm. Not everybody does, and not everybody understands that you can save money by doing unleaded 88 E15. So that's what this bill is all about, getting it to more retailers in more places for more people so they can save more money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that incentivizing those retailers to offer those higher blends and building demand for both corn and soybeans. That's what we're doing here.
And that's where I want to chat with Aaron and Jeremy here because this is kind of, you know, those retailers are kind of the in-between here, right? Like, so we've got the farmers that are growing it, and then we've got the retailers that are putting it out there. So I guess you guys are kind of the in-between, right? Like, it's got to go somewhere for something to happen to it. What would a bill like this, and maybe Aaron, I start with you here, what would a bill like this do for a company like Poet, for a company like this in this space, you know, trying to get, you know, unleaded 88 E15 out there or other types of these biofuels that we're talking about in these bills?
Well, that's a great question, and it's not just a company like Poet. As you both alluded to, it's the average consumer. And, you know, in the presence of the Fort Wayne Farm Show here, it would be extremely beneficial to farmers. So before I answer that question, let me give you a little bit of an overview on what other states are doing. This is not something that would be new for the United States by any realm. So Iowa and Nebraska in 2025 will be offering 9 cents per gallon to the blender. Several other states, Missouri, South Dakota, are at a nickel. This proposal for Indiana would be at a nickel. Ohio just passed 5 cents a gallon. Again, this is a credit to the blender. Illinois has a sales tax exemption. But what this bill is intended to do is push more gallons into the marketplace. Eric, you were saying that you know where to look. You know where to drive around and find these unleaded 88 stations. And by pushing more gallons into the marketplace, we certainly believe that more infrastructure would be developed. Unfortunately, you drive around and you don't see an unleaded 88 in every state, an unleaded 88 station in every community. We'd certainly love to see that. I mean, we're grinding some 40-42% of Indiana's corn into ethanol. So that's a market that didn't exist certainly to this state prior to 1990 or so, and really has exploded since the year 2000. It's been very rewarding for farmers, and just this bill alone, if we were to push these extra gallons into E15. So the bill is read, it's going to be anything greater than E10 or less than E85. Those are both already in the market. So these tax incentives would be blends that are greater than E10, less than E85. So intuitively, it would hit mostly that E15 or unleaded 88 marketplace. There is a max cap that would be available annually, $10 million for ethanol. So if we were able to push those extra gallons through E15, hit the max cap of $10 million, that's 30 million gallons or another, essentially another 10 million bushels of new demand just for this bill. Exponential growth above and beyond that. If we push more gallons out, the consumer begins to make that choice. We clear that next 30 million gallon or 10 million bushel hurdle. Then we start to get, we become more familiar with it. It's cheaper. It burns just as good. It's cleaner even. You don't see any fuel mileage reduction on E15. It's available, can be used in essentially every vehicle on the road today. So it'd be a great step. Again, not just for farmers, but for consumers saving money here in the state.
And Aaron, I maybe should have started with this. Can you tell me a little bit about what POET does in the state as far as, just your contributions to this? Because I know POET is one of the largest in this space in Indiana and really throughout many states around us.
Sure. Yep. So we have 34 plants across the United States, five of those here in the state of Indiana. So we're really happy about seeing this continued growth. Like I alluded to earlier, we're the largest market by far for Indiana for corn, grinding in excess of 40%. We're just under 40% of the entire U.S. And before we had this crop report that I talked about last Friday, we were in a lot of places $4 corn or just over $4 corn. So the farmers have stepped up to the challenge, and we need to continue to grow this market.
Jeremy, from your standpoint, let's look at it on the soybean side. What does this bill do for you?
Yeah, I think, biodiesel is a little different than ethanol. The average consumer doesn't buy diesel for their vehicle, right? But they are buying it indirectly because the semis that haul their products from Amazon and, of course, the farmer with all his equipment, the construction equipment, all using diesel and biodiesel. But for us, the way it's to put it pretty simple, it's just the closer we can ship our product to our final consumer being in Indiana versus loading it by rail and shipping it to the New York Harbor, the closer we ship it, that's less cost for us. And those cost savings do trickle down to the farmer as well. So it also, as we get into this whole world of carbon intensity score, that helps reduce our carbon intensity score if we ship have less transportation. But it's a cost savings. And it's something that we want to promote in Indiana. We're an agriculture state, and we want to promote agriculture. Other states around, as Aaron mentioned, other states around the country are doing things to show that it's important. And I think we need to do it to make a statement as well. It's money back in the pockets of farmers, but it's also a statement. When you've got other states out there like California, who makes a lot of policy that impacts the Midwestern farmer, we want to also say we're going to make those decisions in our own state to promote our farm products. So.
And you alluded to this a little while ago when we were off air, but, you know, I think that the growth that we have seen in this industry, LDC has made tremendous investments.
Yes.
in what you've yes. got going on in Claypool, and you know, to have something like that, I mean, it all kind of goes hand in hand. Like,
oh, absolutely.
We've, yep. You guys are investing in the community. The community wants to be able to invest in the product that you're producing. Like, they're. And now we need the policy to support all of this, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we need support from at the federal level, the state level, and the local county levels. And we just last month had support from our county in the form of a tax abatement that helps us continue another year, another 2 years making major investments into Claypool. We're working on a $50 million investment right now over the next 2 years that our county said, yes, we support that through a tax abatement. And that allows us to give back to the farmer. The more we can produce, whether it's soybean crush or biodiesel production or any of the other products that we make, that helps the farmer. That all goes back to the farmer. It's a pass-through business. So whether it's a tax credit or any type of incentive, that comes back into the basis. And people don't always see that because it kind of gets lost, but it does. It comes back. You can, if you look at basis studies prior to Poet building their plants, us building our plant, you can see that the basis of corn and beans is much stronger than it ever was before that. So, but yeah, major. We want to make investments. We're this is a foreign company making investments in rural America, rural Indiana. And what else can you ask for from whether you're at the county level or state level? This is why Governor Daniels was such a big supporter of us back in the early days, and every governor since has been supporting, and so is our county, and we really appreciate that. So state reps and all the people involved in this, because this is, back to what Steve was saying, this is a process. This didn't just happen overnight. We've been working on this for years, and I would give a shout out to Craig Snow, the state rep in Winona Lake, who's friends with of mine, and we've been working on this. Steve and I have been working on this, and many other people throughout the ag community in Indiana have been working on this type of thing. And it's changed over the years. We've failed, but failure is just, that's just how you learn. And we're trying to figure out a solution, and I think we have a good solution here. And it helps incentivize production. It helps the farmer. It makes a statement around the world, around the country at least, and maybe around the world, that Indiana cares about the farmer and about environmentally friendly fuels, and I think this is fantastic.
Steve, you kind of handed me this sheet here. I want you to go over this because, you know, ultimately we know that the job of the Indiana Soybean Alliance and the Indiana Corn Growers Association is to look out for farmers' interests.
Exactly.
Like that's what you're here to do.
Yeah.
That's what the membership dollars go toward. That's what the sponsorship dollars for event. That's what you guys are all about.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other, you know, like unintended consequences of this mm-hmm. thing that just so happen to be fantastic for consumers and for, I mean, this, any way you look at this, this is just kind of a good bill.
Yes, it is. And again, our motivation is to better the lives of farmers, corn and soybean farmers, and we've really zeroed in on this biofuels tax incentive effort because the quickest way to additional corn grind is E15. If we can incentivize more E15 pumps, that's going to grind more corn. Every day you look at the soybean market, the price of oil has a direct impact on the price of soybean oil has a direct impact on the price of the soybeans. We've got to build demand for soybean oil, and the best way to do that, quickest way to do that right here in Indiana, is with this tax incentive bill. There's other benefits. There's residual benefits, and that's what that's kind of our focus this year, is to show the broader benefit, the return back to Indiana, the ROI, return on investment. We want to show this as an investment that we can make in the state, and it's an ROI. It's a return on Indiana. You know, this is going to benefit Indiana.
Sometimes he has a way with words,
that,
right?
That was clever.
Yeah, we've had a researcher that's done extensive work in biofuels. Growth Energy has had this gentleman do some work We had him do a biodiesel study a couple years ago. We had him take a look at this bill and show us what that impact would be if this is adopted. Just back to the corn and soybean farmers, $117 million in additional annual revenue back to Indiana farmers. And it'll add $104 million to Indiana's GDP, and will save the consumers $11 million annually. And this is an investment of $10 million for the ethanol incentive, $5 million for the biodiesel incentive, total investment of $15 million, and we can show that return right back into Hoosiers' pockets. And if you're, you know, if clean air is what trips your trigger, if you're a state legislator, this is a cleaner fuel. If you're concerned about reducing carbon, we can do that right now with corn and soybean biofuels. So let's get on board and get this done.
And I know that, you know, one of the major pushes of the Holcomb administration and the Indiana Economic Development Corporation has been job growth, and I don't think that's going to slow down in this new administration, especially in rural communities. I think that's a major focus of now Governor Braun is to prop up these rural communities. I see on here as well an additional 677 Indiana jobs could be supported by this bill. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, there's some of us that can remember what Indiana was like before we had a biofuels industry. you know, going back 20-some years, I know that may surprise some folks that's a lot, you know, a lot of years for such a young-looking man like me.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're no more than... You know,
but anyway, I was actually working for a member of Congress here in Fort Wayne, Mark Souter, and when we pushed the first renewable fuel standard, I was working for him also when we opened the
He spoke Louis-Dreyfus. At our event back in 07.
Spoke at the grand opening of the Louis-Dreyfus. So it's really exciting for me to see what the markets were like prior to having this industry right here in Indiana, and then seeing that growth and the benefits. And it's also benefiting those jobs in rural areas. And there's many rural areas that have not seen a lot of opportunity, but the biofuels industry has really provided opportunities in those rural areas. And there's not enough room on the farm for all of our family members. We want opportunities in the rural area so we can keep our families close to us. And the biofuels industry is a great way to do that.
There's a couple things that I want to hit on there as a follow-up to what Steve said. So first would be the pre-biofuel demand, or I guess lack thereof. I mean, if we weren't raising hogs or cattle or chickens, the option was to put the excess bushel on a train car or on the river and get it out of here. So more demand within the state has certainly been a good thing and will continue to be a good thing. You know, as we continue to talk about electric vehicles and some of these, you know, more fuel efficient vehicles, I mean, frankly, there is potentially some downside in the liquid fuel market. And we certainly don't want to revert back to that pre-biofuel demand. You know, if you look out 20 or 30 or 40 years down the road, it may take some of these E15 initiatives in corn to continue to see the demand that we are grinding through today. So it's important to not only grow demand from what we're seeing in today's production, but also to retain the demand that we have already grown, make sure that we preserve it you know, for the next 10 or 15 or 20 years that you alluded to a little bit ago, Steve. And then the other thing there was certainly the, you know, the health benefits. So there's plenty of studies out there. Ethanol, burning ethanol is a 39% reduction in CO2 emissions versus just gasoline. So when I go back and we talk about this, the maximum availability of this tax credit, if that was all in E15, and I already hit on the 30 million additional gallons that we would use in the state of Indiana, or 50 million bushels, or excuse me, 10 million bushels of corn. That's the equivalent of taking 22,500 cars off the road today, just in the reduction in CO2 in the environment. So, I still believe that You know, these biofuels here in our state will continue to be the solution for energy needs and health needs, and continue to grow our markets here internally.
And it just floors me that we can't get federal legislators behind this solution now. It's not like they can't, you know, decide something later that they want to, you know, do something else. But, like, we have a solution right now for this. You know, everyone wants to help out farmers. Everyone wants to lower emissions. And you know, we've got this solution right now, and yet we can't come to an agreement on that.
Well, you know, speaking of the liquid fuels, it reminds me of the Liquid Fuel Summit that the Indiana Swimming Alliance hosts every year for the past, 3 years maybe? Mm-hmm. And I learned this there, and if I have the exact information wrong, please correct me, Steve. But the best way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions today is a hybrid vehicle running ethanol-blended gasoline. And I think if more people understood that, I don't think we would have as big a concern about some of these electric vehicles and whatnot. And I'm just thankful that today I'm driving a hybrid vehicle with ethanol blended gasoline instead of an electric vehicle in this weather that we're seeing here today, because I don't think those electric vehicles would stand a chance here today. But, you know, you mentioned Governor-elect Braun, or whatever the exact term is right now.
He's inaugurated.
He's already inaugurated. Okay,
yesterday.
Governor Braun. I can say that now.
He's one day on the job. So if you're going to criticize him, it's just only one day in, okay? Cut him some slack, man.
Ryan and I saw him at an event he had at Columbia City a few months ago, and I actually talked to him about this state bill that's coming through. So I wanted to make sure he understood how important it was for the area, and for the whole state, really, but especially for the area on the biodiesel side. But it really impacts. That's what I guess we want to make sure people understand. With both corn and soybeans, if it's good for biodiesel or ethanol, it's good for all corn and soybean prices, because we all compete with one another for the feedstock, for the corn and the soybeans. So if the prices are going up at a particular plant because it's biodiesel, the other soybean plants around the state will also see an improvement in price, because it's the same soybeans. We're all crushing the same soybeans. So that's something I think that maybe not everybody completely understands, but it is critical that you might see that, okay, this is a biodiesel plant. I don't have a biodiesel plant in my neighborhood. It doesn't matter. If you sell soybeans in the state of Indiana or corn, you're going to benefit from these types of things. So I don't know if everybody is clear on that, but I just wanted to say it out loud.
Sure. Who's the bill bad for? I mean, I think it's important that we understand who's on the other side of this and what their argument is. Steve, maybe you can shed some light on that. Like, who's the bill bad for? Who's on the other side of this?
We know of no one who is opposed to this effort. I actually had a meeting recently with a representative from Valero. Now, they do have ethanol plants here in Indiana, so they are a biofuels producer as well as an oil company. They're supportive. So you got an oil company that supports it. Country Mark is an oil refinery, farmer-owned oil refinery in southern Indiana. They're supportive of this effort. So that, you know, it's the liquid fuels industry working together because they see the benefits of this investment. Yeah.
I suppose maybe the electric folks maybe wouldn't be thrilled, but they don't.
Well, the trade-off is $10 million tax credit in ethanol, $5 million tax credit in biodiesel, and what we get out of that is $104 million in uplift to our state GDP. So, Eric, I'm not sure who the bill's bad for myself.
Yeah, it's that's straightforward.
Yeah. The question is, and this is where it's sticky here, Steve, because all we've heard leading up to this session is cut, 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 cut. Mm-hmm. And as I spend time at the State House, that's all I continue to hear as we go through this budget process. Anything with new money attached to it going part of this fiscal process, it's going to be heavily scrutinized. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to be looking at what exactly people are asking for. These numbers are great, and I think, you know, they should hold some sway here. Do we have an idea? I mean, obviously, this has been at work for some while. Jeremy, you mentioned you've talked with Governor Braun about it. I know that you've been talking with members of the House and members of the Senate. Like, do we have an idea right now? Are we hopeful? Are we worried? Yeah. Where are we at here, Steve?
Well, I think we do. We're reaching that critical mass within, as far as among supporters within the state legislature, and they'll ultimately decide whether this moves forward or not. you know, we are getting to that point where they're supportive. Being concerned about the budget, fortunately here in Indiana, we've always been very fiscally conservative. That's something we're proud of. And, you know, so that part's nothing new. It's always going to be an uphill battle with our legislature, because they're always going to be watching the budget. That's why we need to show how this investment will return back to Indiana. You can save your constituents a lot of dollars at the pump. You can add jobs to your rural district. You could add to the overall state GDP. You know, this is what the message is going to be heavily throughout this session. I think we can get it done. We've got the right key legislators behind us, and yet you're right. It's going to be more of a challenge because of the budget. The December outlook was slightly better than projected. Hopefully the April forecast comes in strong, and it's just an easier decision to make. But again, getting back to why they should support this, even in tough times, you know, that's when you need to make investments to better your position on the farm. You may need to, when times are tough, is maybe when you need to invest to realize additional income later. That's why this is so important now, is to save consumers money at the pump, add to the farmer's bottom line. And if we had a handful of farmers in each of these House districts and Senate districts across Indiana reaching out to their legislator and say, we need this. This is extremely important to Indiana corn and soybean farmers and to the overall state economy. We can get this thing passed. So it's going to take farmers reaching out on their own, saying, hey, there's these two bills. You got to support them.
And that's where I was going next, because as we mentioned off the top here, a lot of ag bills coming through this session. I think there's going to need to be a lot of that throughout on a lot of these different things. Obviously, we've got property taxes we've got to figure out and trying to lower those for farmland owners. We've got water rights bills, and we've thought for years that, yeah, we probably need to talk about water quality, but now we're talking about water quantity, mm-hmm. something we didn't think we'd have to do. But this is important. We've got other ag bills that are coming down. I think another one I heard was talking about tax credits that go from retiring farmers to new and beginning farmers. Mm-hmm. A lot of different things going on at the State House, and a lot of different issues impacting our industry. We need phone calls on a lot of these different things. Aaron, Jeremy, I'll ask you from a business perspective. Is there a coalition amongst you making these phone calls and trying to get in with these legislators and other than just you, Jeremy? I mean, you can only disguise your voice so many different ways and call a legislator is there some support out there for you guys here as well?
Well, I think. Me personally, yeah, I'm very involved, right? I think that's what we want to encourage everybody in our industry to be involved, the farmer especially. Nothing is more powerful than the voice of a farmer to a legislator. I think it's at the state level, the national level, it really matters. You have to really work the phones, go have a cup of coffee, whatever it is. They want to hear from us. They want to hear from industry. They want to hear from the farmers, and that really helps them feel more comfortable about making the decision that I think most of them want to make. And I think too with this, let's get those environmental groups going. I mean, this is something I think we don't give ourselves enough credit for. I mean, we win at Claypool. We've won multiple awards from Clean Cities in both Indianapolis and the Chicagoland area for the work we do, the producing 100 million gallons of clean fuel every year, for the work we do at the plants. I'm sure Poet does the same thing to help continue to make your facilities more environmentally friendly, more efficient, all these things that we're doing, and the farmers are doing the same thing. So we don't want to forget that, the environmental positive benefits that we're doing with these products. We take it for granted, I think, and we should be proud of it. We got to toot our own horn, because most people are going through life not thinking about the farmer, right? They're thinking about their own life. They're thinking about social media, whatever. They're not thinking about what fuel they put in their vehicle. They're not thinking about this. So we need to talk about it so that people know, hey, we're doing a lot of great things. So yes, I think we should encourage more and more people in our communities, in our companies, our farmers, to go out there and to call those legislators. They want to hear from you. They work for you. They need to hear from you, right? They need feedback.
Yep, and I would echo the same thing. So we have probably reached the point where we are today because of, you know, helping to educate our farmers on these important issues and then asking them for their input. We've had, you know, many strategic initiatives over the years, particularly since we started building plants in this state back in 2007, you know, saying, hey, can you provide your voice with this? Can you tell your representative how important this is to your operation? And it's just going to have to continue to be ongoing. Jeremy, you said it. The voice of the farmer it does not fall on deaf ears. And it's making sure that our farmers know what's important and what really this means to our livelihoods.
Let's take a time out here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. And when we come back, we'll transition here from state policy and talk a little bit more about what's happening at the national level. E15, unleaded 88, year-round. Man, we were so close. Thought we were going to have it. And we'll talk about maybe some 45Z and everything, all the other acronyms that they've got and everything else there at the national level. This is the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast from Hoosier Ag Today. It's presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau.
There is strength in numbers. That's why the Indiana Soybean Alliance membership and policy and Indiana Corn Growers Association need you. These organizations represent Indiana soybean and corn farmers on critical and regulatory issues affecting their industry. Along with support from the national organizations, National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association, the Indiana members help determine public policy positions on critical issues, including farm bills, trade policy, and ethanol and biodiesel legislation. Become a member of Indiana Soybean Alliance membership, Indiana Corn Growers Association, or both. Visit incornandsoy.org to select a membership. That's incornandsoy.org.
At Indiana Farm Bureau, we serve tree farmers, goat farmers, and in fact, all farmers. With over 250,000 members, Indiana Farm Bureau represents a broad range of farmers and puts power in your collective voice. You also get advice from our subject matter experts, more affordable health plan options, and support for youth programs statewide. So whether you grow soybeans or strawberries, membership means you'll be heard. Become a member today at infb.org.
Welcome back here to the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum. The Fort Wayne Farm Show is underway. Eric Pfeiffer here from Hoosier Ag Today on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast with Steve Howell, Aaron Kuhn, and Jeremy Mullins. And we've had the talk now about what's happening at the state level with the General Assembly underway. Let's talk about what's happening at the federal level here. Boy, a lot of change happening there too. And guys, we were this close. We were this close to getting year-round E15 and until I think X wrecked it. X formerly known as Twitter. I think you have to refer to it that way until the end of time. It was part of the continuing resolution, the original continuing resolution that was going to get passed until Elon Musk jumped in, and then President-elect Trump jumped in, and I mean, let's call it what it is. That continuing resolution, I think it did have like 6,000 pages or something crazy like that. But in at least one of those pages was year-round E15. Once it got condensed in a significant way, it just didn't end up in the final draft, and It still kind of stings.
Yeah, it does. We did come close. We just didn't make the year-round E15 fix. Just did not make the final cut. But it's worth noting that it was not a, you know, the kind of torpedoing that that continuing resolution was not because of the year-round E15. It was a number of things. So, I think the new administration is going to be very supportive of the biofuels industry. We did have an EPA rule that was overturned by the courts, but we did have an EPA rule in the first Trump administration that did allow that year-round E15. Now we're back to getting waivers from EPA every year so we can continue to offer that fuel in the summer months. We just need that permanent fix. So again, getting back to the retailers, they need that certainty. So if they're going to make investments in upgrades to their infrastructure, that they have that certainty that they can offer that fuel year-round without any setbacks. So
yeah, that's key, that we've gotten waivers every year. So while it is not, I guess, quote-unquote, legal or whatever the proper terminology would be for that today, the summer window is June 1st to September 15th, and it's because of an outdated law that has to do with reed vapor pressure and evaporation. So essentially something that doesn't even exist anymore was put on the books back in 1990, and it's just been a hurdle to get around it. However, since Steve alluded to, and the Trump administration back in 2018 gave the executive order to allow it. We have had year-round E15 since then. Mm-hmm. Now, the last couple of years, the Biden administration, because of the ongoing war with Russia and Ukraine, has dubbed it as an emergency energy crisis. We've kind of gotten the pathway since that, again, Russia-Ukraine invasion. So we've got some states around us, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, South Dakota, Wisconsin. I don't know those off the top of my head, by the way. I looked down to my notes. Have submitted the waiver that has been accepted by the EPA. Unfortunately, Indiana didn't. Doesn't mean that we won't at some point. So they should have the green light in perpetuity, as I understand. But yeah, still need the fix, and especially with this House Bill 1127 that would further incentivize the use of E15. Very, very important to get it done. I presume we'll find some way to get it done again this year, just as we have since beginning in the summer of 2019. That's yet to be seen how the legislation will be creative to get that done.
With Governor Braun now being Governor Braun instead of Senator Braun, what's been his track record, Steve, on ethanol and how that works? I mean, is this, what Aaron talked about here with, applying for the waiver and everything? That was a governor-led thing, I believe, in those states. Was Senator Braun, pretty favorable in these areas?
Yeah, Senator Braun was always, as a senator, was very supportive of the biofuels industry. A lot of times we would see him on his own, frankly, submit comments to EPA in support of the biofuels industry here in Indiana. So he's been very supportive. We'll certainly have that conversation and look for opportunities to add Indiana to that list of states for that waiver.
Is this something that might get tackled in a new farm bill, or is it too late for that, Steve?
I figured you'd come back to trying to pin me down on something with farm bill.
I think
the gloating has begun. If you remember right, we had a little friendly wager on a tenderloin sandwich, whether the farm bill would get done in the calendar year of 24.
And it is 2025
and
now,
I think
it?
It's about time to pay up, and we'll make that happen. I'll be good for it. But.
Yep.
I don't think, if you want to hit on farm bill real quick, but then I think we ought to pivot back to some other biofuels efforts. I don't think we're going to see much action on the farm bill until maybe in June. Behind the scenes, staff level, committee staff level, they're going to be working right away. But as far as ready for primetime movement, I don't think you're going to see that till midsummer.
Yeah. Well, I know that, with Republicans in control of all of that now, we will likely see some things like Prop 12. We might see a fix for that for pork producers. I'm just wondering, does year-round E15 maybe fall into that as well? Could it be?
Yeah, it's possible that you could roll that legislation right into a farm bill if needed. Yeah, I think that is possible. That's typically, though, an Energy and Commerce Committee function. So how much of that can kind of switch committees? I'd have to brush off some of my past knowledge on how Congress works. But we are certainly going to look for every opportunity to get that done.
Yeah.
One more soundbite before we jump away from E15. So I'm sure everyone that's listening to you, Eric, knows, but just in case if you don't, basically every single gallon of gasoline that you buy today, unless otherwise labeled, is E10, so 10% ethanol. And because of that, you know, we've developed this huge biofuel market and consequently a large demand stream for corn. If every single gallon of gasoline that the consumers across the United States would buy today was E15, which can be used in essentially all cars, that would be north of 8 billion additional gallons of ethanol, or call it 2.5+ billion bushels of additional corn use today. That market is just out there ready for the taking. I think the consumer wants it. I'm pretty sure the farmer wants it. I know the four of us standing around this table would love to see it. That's a huge opportunity for us, and frankly, the biggest story that's out there for the growth of corn right now.
It's just other countries have done it. I mean, other countries are even higher than E15, right? I mean, yeah. It's just a matter of, you're right, kind of pulling that trigger and saying, yeah, this is the direction we're going. But you've got lobbyists on the other side. I mean, it's a political game, and that's just where it's at right now, trying to keep people happy.
And with E15, it's not a mandate. It's a choice.
Yeah.
It's a consumer choice. If they want to reach for that E15 pump and save a few cents per gallon and have a cleaner fuel, it's their choice. We just want to offer that choice.
It's just... I guess incumbent upon me and other folks to make sure people know they have that choice and that it's a good choice, a safe choice. I still think that there's this, gosh, from years and years and years ago, that there's this, you know, ethanol's not safe thing out there, and it's just a bunch of baloney.
It is. It's safe, and it's safe for vehicles the way the vehicles are built today, and it's certainly safe for the environment. The other stat that I didn't rattle off. If all those vehicles today were filling up with E15 instead of E10, that'd be taking something like 2 million vehicles off the road without taking a single vehicle off the road. I mean, that's some 40% of our electric car market today. So when you think about the environmental aspect of it being safe, not to mention the fact that E15 has been the most vigorously tested fuel in the history of liquid fuels, just to kind of overcome some of these naysayers that are out there kind of across the landscape.
And just for full disclosure, even though my focus isn't ethanol and corn, Louis Dreyfus does have an ethanol plant in Iowa. So we're supportive of ethanol, and we're working hard around the country to help where we can.
Yeah. In the way of biofuels as well, coming out earlier, I think, just yesterday, we saw some news coming out of the Treasury Department in the way of 45Z. And we've been talking about this for some time now, and these tax credits at the federal level. And the hard part about trying to explain all of this and get it all figured out is I don't know that they've got it figured out and they can explain all of it at the federal level out of the Treasury Department. And that was clear yesterday as well when they put out quote-unquote rules, and still everyone's a little bit confused about what everything is going to include, and we're expecting maybe some more information yet this week. But I'll say it so you guys don't have... This, for me, was expected to be punted to the next administration. It didn't surprise me that there just wasn't a whole lot of meat here. But this is something that we just keep talking about and talking about, because ultimately when we talk about 45Z, it's people not in the U.S. receiving these tax credits. It's not corn growers. It's not soybean growers. It's we're giving them what to Brazil? Is that where it's going? I mean, where's it going?
Well, 45Z is a clean fuel production credit, so it would actually in the value chain it would go through like Jeremy's plant and ours at Poet. There are some strings attached. You have to have a CI score, a carbon intensity score of 50 to begin to qualify. And then it's tiered from 50 all the way down to zero. What that's going to look like for sure, we don't know. And how we're going to measure that, we also don't know. But as one of the rulings that came out, that was made clear. So that was consistent kind of with what we had thought. But we still don't know how we're going to get there. Again, it's going to be funneled through. The credit would go through the biofuel producer, be it a biodiesel plant or an ethanol plant, and then some kind of value share with the farmer thereafter. Also, what we learned last week was there was some reference made to CSA. If you don't know what that means, that would be like climate smart ag practices. So those are, when you think about no-till or minimum-till, you think about using cover crops, you're using, some kind of a manure as a fertilizer replacement for nitrogen. Those kind of climate-smart ag practices will be in the mix somehow, so we can score our corn that's grown here in the state of Indiana. So a lot of the things that we thought were kind of discussed, and it sounds like more of a guarantee, but we're not quite sure how we're going to implement all those. In addition to that, 45Z is part of the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act. It was part of that huge package. And beginning next Monday, we will have a new administration. So the fact that it is in place today, it actually started January 1st of 2025, sunsets December 31st of 2027. So it's in place for 3 years. The fact that it is in place today, we at POET, I'm sure Jeremy, you at Louis-Dreyfus, have taken some internal steps for our farmers, for our producers, to be able to help them score and figure out, the feedstock that we're bringing into our plant. So we aren't behind on that. It's just we don't know all the calculations yet. The model hasn't been released. Certainly the rules haven't been released. But we did get some very, very vague affirmation on some of the things that we did think. Jeremy, I don't know what you'd like to add on the biodiesel side.
Yeah, I wanted to maybe clarify a little bit, maybe with a little bit of background, if that's okay. So
sure.
For 20 years, the biodiesel world has had a tax credit, a blender's tax credit. 40A is the fancy name from Congress. So that's been a very simple tax credit that we've had since before Claypool was built. And it's $1 a gallon tax credit for the blender of the biodiesel. So there's been some confusion among some farmers, found out last month, and I want to make sure I discuss that and clarify it, because we're going from a blender's credit to a producer credit with 45Z. And there were some farmers out there may be some that are listening today, that I want to make sure they understand. Some thought that was a credit to the producer of the soybeans or the corn, but that's not the case. It's the producer of the fuel that gets that credit. So if anybody's out there and you'd heard at the coffee shop that it was to the farmer, it's not a direct payment to the farmer. It goes to the producer. And the reason that term is important is before it was going to the blender of the fuel, which could be the producer because we blend on site, or it could be to the truck stop or whatever. So that's one of the changes, I think, that has confused people. So I just wanted to go through that, because I know I've had that response in person with a lot of farmers. So I just wanted to make sure that we touched on that. But the real big thing that's important is we're going from a tax credit that didn't involve carbon intensity scores to one that does. So it's a sliding scale, so it's like golf. The lower your score, the better that is for you. And yes, we are working with regenerative ag programs, and our head of that is right back there behind you guys. So he's here from Toronto, and we're working on different programs. But it's really hard to come up with the exact program when you don't know what the tax credit's going to be yet. So we're trying a bunch of things, and I think we're all doing the best we can. And there's going to be some opportunities for farmers, and they will get most likely be paid a premium for these practices. What's that going to be? I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and guess, because then I'll be wrong and then somebody will have it reported. But we are working on it really hard. It's very tricky. It's going to happen, and you won't get a direct payment from the government in a tax credit, but you will get rewarded for these practices. Because the carbon intensity score at our plants, there's multiple types of measurements. But the scope 3 is the biggest, and that's what the farmer does. So what the farmer does on his farm impacts our carbon intensity score at our plants. And what we do matters as well, but it doesn't calculate as much as what the farmer does. So that's why we're all out there trying to get the farmer to change practices or record what they've already been doing. A lot of them are already doing this stuff, right? So it just takes some work, some documentation, and verification and all that stuff. So please bear with us. I know it's a pain in the butt. It's a pain in the butt for us too, because we're going from a tax credit that did not have a carbon intensity score to one that does. So it's not fun and games for us either. It's hard, but for us to stay relevant, and you know, as Steve mentioned age earlier, I'm 52 now. You can tell with the gray hair, I'm not a young man anymore, but I just want to stay relevant. And the industry's changing so fast. This is the biggest change that I've seen in my time at Claypool, is this tax credit. It's a huge change for us as an industry. So I want to stay relevant. The farmer wants to stay relevant, and it's tough. And we got to all do this, some things we don't want to do, and to make this work, because we are all in this together. I know it sounds cheesy, but it's true.
Yeah. I think one of the concerns is, you know, what are those climate smart ag practices going to be? And, you know, what are the scores tied to them and everything else? That's what I hear from farmers, because, you know, in some of the previous guidelines, doing cover crops, it wasn't really just going to be enough. Like, you had to do more and more and more and more and more. And I think that's what some of the concerns are.
Of course.
So, you know, until we get some more of those clarifications, that's where maybe some of the angst is.
Oh, sure. And if you think about some of the early rumors of what that was going to look like, it wasn't really fair, because not every farmer in this country can do the same farming practices,
yes.
Right? So they really have to be separated. You can't really lump them all together and say you have to do all of them, because not every farmer can. They're in a different part of the country, different, you know, environment, colder weather, whatever it is. So that is very stressful, right, thinking about that, the anxiety of what is that going to be. And we're still waiting for those details.
Yeah. Steve, we've covered a ton here in just under an hour. What else do we need to get covered here while we've got Aaron and Jeremy, or did we hit it all?
Well, we probably didn't hit quite everything.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to know that ag groups are going to stand together and fight for the industry, and that's what we're doing here with all these efforts. And if you're a member of the Indiana Soybean Alliance and the Indiana Corn Growers Association, thank you. If you produce corn and soybeans and you're not a member, we need you. We've got to have a bigger voice to get, you know, this is just kind of one topic here that we work on trade, we work on farm bill and other farm programs, work on infrastructure. There's a lot to get done. On the farm, you don't have time to do this. You've got a farm to run, but we can do that for you. If you're not a member, please join. We need your additional voice. But there's a few other things maybe to hit on
If it's okay, I'd like, yeah. I just wanted to mention the UCO conversation. That's the past 2 years. It's used cooking oil. It's a very controversial topic, so I won't say anything to get me in trouble. I try not to, at least.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Edit that out. But
I enjoy when people say things that get them in trouble. I get to report on it then. Go for it.
But there were some pieces of this that came out on Friday. There were rumors on Thursday night, and I told my team, I said, it was like 10:30 at night when the rumor started coming out of D.C. I said, you better rest up because it's going to be a busy day tomorrow. And with the crop report on Friday and then this announcement about UCO, markets were crazy, bonkers, right? But for me, the euphoria, some of that excitement has cooled off since then. I was on cloud nine on Friday. But since I've slept over the weekend, and then I was on a long flight yesterday and coming here, and I had time to read through some of the details, and it was like, yeah, I'm not so as excited as I was a few days ago. So I think we just keep that in mind, that the UCO change, where it's not going to be allowed, at least now, it's a temporary thing until we get further guidance for renewable diesel, for on-road fuel. It's still allowed for SAF. That may not last. That may just be a temporary thing. There's plenty of groups out there that want UCO. They want it to be eligible because they want more feedstock. So this is a tricky time for us. Policy is very tricky. We have conflicting interests within our industry. Some are wanting UCO imports. Some don't. So just don't get too excited about it like I did on Friday. It may only be temporary, and we'll see what happens. Like he said, there's a new administration starting in a few days. Everything might just be on hold for a few months. I don't know. But I do know that we do have some friends from our industry, some farmers, some industry folks that are going to be in the new administration. And I don't know what's announced and what's not, so I won't give any names. But we also have people in that administration that's not so friendly to our products. So keep that in mind. Soybean oil is one that's been looked at in a negative way by some. So just keep that in mind. We need all the advocacy we can get from the farmer to support what we do. And never going to say what we make is perfect, but we've been feeding the world for a long time, and we don't want to interrupt that. So.
Yeah, I would. I guess as we think about some closing thoughts here, Jeremy, you kind of alluded to it, we've got farmers that are asking nonstop, when can you tell us more about 45Z and how soon can you pay us, and is there going to be any kind of payments for these climate smart ag practices? You will be the first to know, speaking to the farmers that are listening to this podcast right now, you folks will be the first to know. As soon as we know, because it can't be soon enough. I mean, we've been waiting on this, frankly, for just as long as you have and have been trying to prepare. Point of view around that would be to do what makes sense for your farm. Not everything, again, as Jeremy alluded to, is going to make sense for every farm. But start thinking about getting comfortable with, documenting some of those practices that you're doing. Maybe trying some more practices, climate smart ag practices, if you haven't tried them yet. It could be a new potential demand stream for us as we go forward in time. But again, there's not any larger demand stream in front of us right now, at least for the corn industry and the corn market, than E15. So if you're not filling up with unleaded 88, do so. For all the consumers that are listening to this podcast, if you're not saving that 5 or 10 or 15 cents a gallon, consider it. Give it a try. I think you'll be really happy with it. And that really is, that shiny object that's out there that's just for the picking. We just got to go out there and get it.
All of our legislators listening to the podcast right now, go ahead and fill that up with unleaded 88.
Yeah.
Make your way to the State House and then vote accordingly.
That's exactly right.
Couldn't
have said it better.
Yeah,
that's a good plan.
Perfect. Guys, thank you. And I do just want to point out again, like we mentioned off the top, there are a ton of ag bills that are moving through the State House. And Steve, I hope you'll join me again as we go through all of these, because, I mean, it's going to be a very busy session for agriculture. We talk about the different ag groups and how that we are the barnyard. We're trying to come together and get together behind the scenes on all of these things. I know we're waiting for, a grain buyer's bill to come through. There are just so many things, and then this budget as well. That's kind of why I wanted to do this podcast. This is kind of what I like to do. I am not a policy wonk, because policy wonks know everything about policy. I know just enough to be dangerous and ask the right questions. I would like to bring you the policy wonks on this podcast so we can actually discuss what's going on. So we're going to follow all of these different ag bills throughout the session, and this is going to be an interesting one here between now and April.
Yeah, you're right. There are a number of ag issues that are going to be at the State House, but just know that the farmer's voice is present in the hallways. We're carrying that voice to Indianapolis. And again, if you're a member, thank you. If you're not, please join.
What's the website, Steve? Where do people need to go? I'm going to put you on the spot here.
No, I'll let you. You're the information guy. I'm just the policy guy.
incornandsoy.org. That's where
you
go.
Hey, you nailed it.
That's where you go. Thanks for tuning in to the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, brought to you by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau. We'll do it again next time.